My name is Atlee Hunter. I've been developing software for a long time. Sorry, I'm going to have to go through this again. But I've written a number of phone applications, so I have a lot of experience with the new modern UI or Metro. I don't work for Microsoft, so I can call it whatever I want. I've been developing software for a long time. I've been developing software for these mobile platforms. I've been developing mobile software actually for more than 10 years. I've written software on everything from Palm OS, and not the HP Palm, but the original Palm, right on up. So I've had a lot of experience with the touch-centric, touch-first type of design that you're looking at when it comes to writing software for the new modern UI. So what we're going to go over here is some of the basics of Windows 8 development, some of the new tools, some of the new languages, and how they work together and how they go together. So one of the first things I want to direct you to is this is a very, very social event. There's a lot of people that are viewing online as well as people that are here on premises. So please, by all means, tweet. If you're tweeting about the event, please include Purely Imagine on Facebook. We're w8pi.ca, PI on FB. By all means, feel free to post questions, comments, anything that you want. We're looking for your feedback, both the people that are viewing remotely and the people that are viewing here during the event. And again, hashtags are Dev1 and Win8PI. So I'm hoping to see lots of great comments. If you have any problems or if there's anything that you think I've missed, by all means, get a hold of me, talk to me. I'm on Twitter. Actually, you can see My Twitter address is @AtleeHunter. By all means, feel free to tweet, ask me a question. I get tons of them. I love talking to the developers. I learn as much as everybody else from this communication, so the communication is very, very vital. So I'm hoping that you guys will all get talking with each other and with us as well. So with Windows 8, they've really sort of reimagined both the UI and the way that we're writing software, because we have to. The market's changed. The whole concept of mobile computing has really started to come into its own. It's something that I know that Bill Gates had a vision of 15 years ago, back when Windows 95 was first coming out. He really was, he knew the future was going to be in mobile computing, and it took a long time for the device architecture and the capabilities of the device manufacturers to get the devices that could run stable, valid computing platforms at the speed and with the lightness and the battery life and everything else that we needed to be able to do the things that we can now do. So with that comes a reimagining of the way we write our software. We write our software with a touch-forward interface. Okay, what that means is when you're looking at your design of your UI and when you're looking at how the interaction of the code behind works, you think of touch first. You think of physical interaction with the device. The keyboard and the mouse part is a given. It comes for free. And that's sort of the catchphrase Microsoft's using right now is program for touch, the keyboard and mouse comes for free. So with that, there's also a really, really interesting change in the way they've affected programming languages to enable more developers to be able to develop to their skills, right? To be able to utilize their skill sets and the things that they know how to do already, and to expand and extend those knowledges, and to reach more users and create more engaging and fascinating experiences for the user. So what we're going to look at here is just how many people here have Windows 8 on a computer? That's awesome. That's really cool. Okay, so I can pretty much gloss over most of this then, because we're all fairly familiar at this point with the UI, with the idea of touch forward, right? Being able to scroll back and forth, being able to snap to view a group of data and to see it interactive in a different way and in a different UI while still making use of the same views, the same data, just showing it a different way and interacting with it a different way. So that's part of, a big part of that is design, but another part of it is understanding the programming, how you wanted to lay it out, and what that means to the code that's running behind the UI. Now, move my desktop, and I don't know where I put it. So when you're looking at how the devices and how everything else works, you've got to think about the fact that these applications all move and, whoops, sorry. Let's open up something else here. That app can't open? Really? I'm being told nothing can open. That's awesome. Oh, the screen app resolution. Okay, fair enough. I was going to show you the Snap interface because that ends up being a big part of when you're designing and building your apps because you have to include the Snap interface, the Fill interface, and the Full interface. Unfortunately, at the resolution for this presentation, I can't show you those interfaces. So with the new changes to the UI, became some very, very serious platform investments and platform changes. What they did is, like I said, they were trying to build an experience for developers that was more intuitive and gave them more capabilities to use the skills that they already had, but to use them in a different way. One of the big ones being HTML5 and JavaScript being, anybody here an HTML5 or a JavaScript programmer? Primarily, yeah? So what they've done is they've done something that isn't available on any of their platform right now, which is a very, very cool and very exciting thing. You have the ability to build a native app in HTML5 and JavaScript. Okay? It will hit the system at the same rate, the same way a C# XAML or a C++ XAML application will hit the system. It has got the same access to libraries and components as all of the other platforms do. So one of the other things came out was the Windows Store. The idea of how many people here hate writing installers and setup programs? I know I do. It ends up being a nightmare. I like writing the software, and then we hand the installer process off to the install group, and it's like, you guys take care of that. I don't want to deal with it. That is a really, really nice thing. I like the idea of the Windows Store because as an independent software developer especially, it gives me the ability to hand that off to someone else, let them worry about the control and holding and marketing and making it available to the users and the customer base. That's something that as an independent developer and as an independent developer of software targeted at mobile platforms, I've been experiencing for years, and that used to be quite a nightmare. Anybody here ever built a shareware program and had to distribute it? Okay, maybe just a couple of people like me that are ancient and have been doing this forever. That's something that, if you remember those days, the getting that out there, getting it out to different locations, different websites, and trying to market it and everything else was a bit of a nightmare. The Windows Store allows anybody to compete at scale. You also don't have to do the packaging and the boxing and the distribution and getting it out to Future Shop or Best Buy or Staples or any of these other companies. It goes into the store and it's available to everybody right at their home. That gives you a much easier chance to extend and to reach your public and to also provide updates. Updates are always, in software, updates can tend to be one of the hardest things to get users to adapt to. So you've got, how many people here work for a company where you know there's at least three different current versions of your software running all across the company? Yeah, exactly. Me too. I used to work for a company like that. That's a nightmare. It's a nightmare to administrate. It's a nightmare to support. And it's expensive to support because the first question you're asking is, okay, so can you go to help and about? What version are you running? What have you got? Okay, well, can you please go and update this? Well, I don't want to update because I'm missing this or that. With the Windows Store, the way it's implemented, the users get told automatically when there's updates. Installing them is completely simple, very easy and intuitive. They don't have to worry about it or think about it too much. That is a much nicer experience for the user. It enables the user and it also compels the user to use it. And you find that your software tends to get distributed much more readily and much more easily. So the Windows 8 Core OS starts off with the kernel, just like every other version does. Then, then what we have is our traditional desktop apps. These are what we're familiar with now, is we have the kernel, and then you have your HTML and JavaScript running on Internet Explorer. You also have your Win32, which is running your C and C++. And then you have your .NET or and your MSIL, and you have your C# and your VB on there, okay? So that's what we're used to now, and that's where we're coming from Windows 7 moving into Windows 8. What they've done is they have actually created a base layer called WinRT. Okay, WinRT is a set of libraries that allows access to all of the communication, the graphics and media, including DirectX, and devices and printing. All of that stuff that we used to have to worry about at different levels before is now all in one level. It's all in one place. It's much more easy to understand going from language to language. It's much easier to support. And then you have your application model, okay, which is where all of that then connects down to the kernel. Then all of the languages are treated exactly the same, okay? C, C++, C# and VB, and HTML and JavaScript are all treated exactly the same way. They all have the same access to components, devices, and everything else. So you can build an excellent, stable, and fast experience across all those platforms. Okay, and that is actually something that's really compelling. I know that in my tests, some of the traditional apps that I've written in C# have actually run much faster on Windows 8. I don't know if any of you guys have tried that yet or played around with it. You'll find that your existing applications converted to a Windows 8 and a WinRT platform will run faster in most of the cases. I have yet to see a case where it doesn't. And these are called, well, Metro-style apps. Modern UI is the phrase we're supposed to use, but that's funny. Look, because I keep getting in trouble for it, and then I get this, and it's like, well, that's what it says. And apparently, that's where this wants to go. Hello? Okay. There we go. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to do a quick little demo. Anybody here a C++ programmer? So we're going to start this morning by creating a C++ application using WinRT and XAML as the front end. So we'll simply go over here, start new project, and we're going to go with C++, and we're going to create a blank app. So we're going to call this one Hello World, because that's basically going to be your first app, right? Usually, Hello World. So just give it a second here, and it template generates my Hello World app. We'll take a quick look at the project here first before we get started. If you notice here, I've got my includes up here. I've got my using namespaces, and this is very, very definitely C++. So what we're going to do here is look at the assets. What we have here is a folder that contains all of our images that we need for the tiles and the images that we're going to need for our splash screen for our Windows 8 store application. And then we have a common folder here, which contains the standard style XAML file. Now, this is fantastic because it contains a lot of preset standard references and styles to be used for creating your UI. So you can create a very commonly recognized and understood UI with your C++ XAML application. Which is really nice that the template includes that in there. And then we've got our app.xaml, which is the entry point into the application. And then we have your first screen, your main page. And if you notice, the pages behind, the code behind is C++, and it's got its header page as well. So it's not running any managed code, it's actually running directly C++, and the XAML is being run through the front end. So what we're going to do is we're going to put a button here. We're going to add a button. If you look at, we're getting IntelliSense helping us all the way through here. We're going to add some content. I'm going to say click here, please, because we're Canadian and we're always polite. And we're going to add a click event. And if you notice that I get IntelliSense that says add a new event handler, and I'll go ahead and let it do that for me. Now I want the button to appear in the center of the screen, so I'm going to do horizontal alignment equals center.
And there we go. We'll see that if we look here, we're going to get the button showing up in the center of our screen. So that's how it's going to look. So once I go into here, I can navigate to the event handler. And here I've got my C++ event handler. So what we want to do is run a dialog. So we'll auto dialog equals reference new windows. Oops. UI. Pop-ups. And message dialog. And we're going to say hello world. It's me, Allie. So there we go. We got our dialog, and then we'll do DLG dot. Oops. Forgetting and going back into my old C. C sharp days. Let's see. Show async. So there we go. And that's it. So now what we'll do is we will push F5 and we'll compile that. Yes, we do want to build it. If you notice here, it's building all of my my C++ libraries and getting everything to run. Building the back end in C++. Building the XAML file, and away we go in a couple of seconds here. So if you notice, it's creating all the libraries. It's creating a library and an exe. It's not creating any managed code there. So there's my splash screen and my button. Click here, please. So we'll click here. And we get the message dialog. Now, in a Windows Store application, the message dialog runs right across the entire screen of the runnable area for the application. And what I mean by that is if this application was in a snap state, and I can't because of my screen resolution, but if this application was in a snap state, that message dialog would take up that whole snap state area. It wouldn't go across the rest of the screen to the other applications. So when we click here, we go closed, and we're back to our button. So that, if we go into the actual folder to see what was created, this is what was created. The object file library, the program debug database, the WinMD file, the Windows markup. Now, and that's how it's showing. It's showing as Windows markup file, and it's the application. So there is no .NET framework. This is not using the CLI at all. This is using C++. It's using XAML as the front end, and it runs quick, clean, and opens up a whole world of possibilities for all of us.
WinRT APIs, okay, are native. Okay, they are accessible from C++ and from C#, okay, as well as from JavaScript and HTML5. Okay. XAML can be used directly from C++, okay, without any intermediary. Okay, the XAML libraries run natively against the WinRT. Okay, they run as a native UI compiled, so you do not have to do any intermediate steps to make your XAML accessible from your C++ programming. Okay, you can literally open up a C++ project, put a XAML UI in place, and access your C++ code directly from it. You can also make your C++ code portable. So you do have the ability to take, you can mix and match. You can have a C# XAML application and put C++ WinRT-enabled libraries inside it and utilize them together. And that actually gives you a lot of extensibility. Okay, so the fundamentals, okay, of the store APIs, okay, of the WinRT APIs, you have all sorts of different services that are available to you automatically that you used to have to do separately, okay? Like I said before, the updates and compiling and the setting up of setup files, install shield, all of those other tools that you used to have to use, those are all now part and parcel of your development experience and integrated with the Windows Store as your distribution services. Okay, so through the WinRT, you have access to media. Okay, you can use playback, capture for images, pictures, whatever else. You can play two different devices. You have access to play a particular music file or video file or image file directly to another device. Okay, so you have access also to devices and sensors. Okay, you have access to things like NFC if the device has capabilities for it. You have access to geolocation, location sensors, and you also have access to any other sensors that the device may have through the devices section of the WinRT API. You also have access to communications and data. You have access to contracts between the system itself for things like search. You have access to different storage medias, different streams that are available through the WinRT. And you also have... you also have access to a number of different basic API calls that we're all familiar with in .NET. Things like networking, XML, web clients, a number of things like that. Awesome. And then you have your access to your user interface elements. Sorry about the hassles, guys. You have access to things like HTML5, XAML. You have access to easy data binding through XAML, through basically all the interfaces, and through HTML5. You have access to the tiles and the other UI elements that are based both in the Windows UI itself, so that it gives you the ability to portray information to engage your users and to help incorporate a more immersive and fulfilling experience for the users through passing information directly to the UI of the device itself. Okay, so
here what we're going to do is we're going to actually do the same Hello World app as we did in C++, but we're going to do it in C#. So we're going to start off by creating file, new project, and coming up to C#, blank app, and we're going to call it Hello World. And open up the application. Now, you'll notice that once it's opened up and run the template and created the application, you'll see that it's very similar to the C++ application we created a few minutes ago. You've got your assets, all the same images are there. You've got your common standard style XAML file. You've got an app XAML and the code behind, and the main page. Now the main page in the app XAML, you'll notice that the code behind is C#. So you've got your main page here. So what we're going to do here is we're going to start off by putting in the same button we put in last time. So we'll go button content equals these. Always trying to be polite to the users, and we do here. Now we'll wait for the IntelliSense to come up and it'll create our event handler. Actually, we're going to do a horizontal alignment equals center. So essentially, we've got the exact same button that we created last time. And if we look at the page that we created, we can see that that we are getting our button in the center. Okay, so we'll go to the code behind and we will add the code that we need. So we're going to start off here with var message dialog equals new Windows And again, we're going to say hello world. Let's read it that way. And so that's very, very similar to what we had before, just in C sharp syntax. And here we're going to do a message dialog dot show async. So now we've got the show async, but we can't use it exactly like that. We need to put in an await here. And we also need to make this a private async void. So now all the dialogues and all the UI elements are asynchronous in Windows 8. So what we need to do is we need to allow for that. In order to do that, we need to use the async identifier of the signature, and we need the await for the message dialog. So now if we were to run this by pressing F5, we will get essentially the same app we got in C++. Click here, please. Again, it's themed and everything's ready, and there's my dialogue, exactly the same as before. So there's an example of how quick and easy it is to get the exact same result in two different languages, and also how quick and easy it is to set up elements and get UI responsiveness in this new framework. Now, what we're going to do is we're also going to show here basically the file picker. So what we want to do is after this, we're going to get the we're going to change this button click here and comment out this. And we are going to open up a file picker. So we're going to create a file open picker. We're going to do the open picker view mode equals picker view mode dot thumbnail. So we're going to get thumbnail of it. We're going to go and open a graphic. So open picker. Just the start location. So what we want to do is we want it to actually open us up in the pictures library. So that will do that. Now we're only going to want to get, let's see, open file picker dot types file type. File type filter. So what we're going to do is we're going to add a file type filter to only get JPEGs. Oops, and oops. Dot add. Wondering why that was coming up like that. And PNG. Okay, so I guess if we're going to go for JPEGs, we should go for JPEGs too. File dot add okay, so we've got our file types there, and we are going to go get a storage file. We're going to get a storage file from on the dialog. So we have this as a wait. Pick single file. So we only want one file this time. So we'll use the pick single file async. And if file is not equal to null, we will create our dialog box. Let's actually give a dialog message here that tells us what file we picked. And here we go. You picked file. So it'll tell us what file we picked. So we're going to now press F5 and run this. And essentially what will happen is when we click the button, it's going to open up the file, the library, the picture libraries, and allow us to pick a picture. And do file extensions must be. Ah, okay, so I forgot to put the periods in the file extensions. My mistake. So one second here, we'll add the picture or the extensions here. Okay, so now we'll give it another shot and it will allow us to open up our picture location and go find the picture and open it. So, and it tells us that I picked the appbar.png. So cool, so that gives us an example of seeing how both the dialog box and the file picker works, and you can see how easy it is to go out and use suggested start locations to start off in the appropriate libraries for the users, add filter types, and create a file picker that will open up a single file. You could open up multiple files as well, and using the async keywords, being able to make a UI responsive section of code that's not going to change or affect how the UI interacts with the user and gives you a smooth, clean, and fast and fluid Windows 8 application.
So all of the WinRT APIs are asynchronous, okay? So you have the ability to create excellent UI forward experiences for the user where the UI is not held up by waiting for some information and for some data. That does create, though, a different thought pattern and a different way of looking at your application to make sure that things are happening when the user's expecting them and how the user's expecting them. One of the things that it does give you the ability to do, though, is create a very smooth, very easy to use, and very intuitive interface and application experience, which is what you should be aiming for at all times. And one of the other nice things is that you have, with that asynchronous model, you have a very, very rich interaction between the back-end services that you're utilizing, whether they're from a disconnected system on the web or in the cloud, to your device itself or to maybe a network resource. So you have the ability to create these really, really enriched systems in basically any platform. Now, like I said, the RT APIs feel completely natural in all three platforms, or all three programming platforms, which, like I said, is a very, very new thing. So one of the nice things, like I said before, is that you can mix and match a bit. You can actually create elements in C++ and utilize them in other components, so you have the ability to project from one language to another. All of the languages are basically projected into the same level at the same point. So you have the same experience and the same access from C++ as you have from XAML and HTML5. Like I said, when we were talking before, we said I was talking about the fact that you're trying to create a very, very common user experience, okay? And that goes along with a lot of the things that they're talking about in the design track. You're trying to create something that feels common to the UI, common to the system itself. And with the abilities to that WinRT offers to all of the different platforms, you have the ability to create the exact same scenario in no matter what platform you've chosen. In Windows Store apps, what you're really looking to do is utilize the modern UI, okay? Make sure that you understand the layout and the components that are necessary with relation to that modern UI, because it will help your users feel more at home and more relaxed with your software. If they feel more at home and more relaxed, they will use it more. It will get recommended more. People will feel a lot better about using it. I'm sure we've all had, anybody here have software they hate to use because it just feels weird, like it feels out of place, right? See, that's one of the nice things is with the modern UI, it creates a simple, clean, function-forward design. So if I'm doing something, that's what's available on the screen. That's all I'm seeing on the screen. It's not cluttered. There's not 800 other things going on. I can focus on getting that one thing done and getting on with what I need to do. Fast and fluid. When I was talking earlier about the asynchronous model of the WinRT, that really helps assist in that fast and fluid feeling. You want to make sure that your UI reacts and interacts with the user the way they're expecting it to, giving them the kind of indicators that things are coming and things are happening in the background, but not making them feel like they're stuck. Anybody here ever uninstalled an application because it seemed like it was freezing all the time because it was taking too long to get data and stuff like that? That's what you're trying to avoid with the new modern UI, and that's what the WinRT helps you avoid by creating that asynchronous methodology to all the API calls. Now, one of the other things you're going to want to keep in mind is in the design of your application, you have three different views for your application. And 99% of the time, you're going to want to adhere to all three of those views. You have snap, fill, and full. Okay, snap is the small view off to the side. Fill is that other view that's left when you have something snapped. And then the full is when you have access to the full screen. You're going to want to realize that that is going to be the scenario for 99% of the time. Now, when I say 99% of the time, there are some scenarios where games tend to fall outside of that particular purview because if you snap a game, sometimes the game will say paused. Sometimes they won't snap. That tends to be sort of at the discretion of how the certification process sees that as being necessary. Now, the contracts. I haven't touched too extensively on the contracts. When you swipe in from the side on your Windows device that doesn't show up on this screen, awesome. well, what you should be seeing, I think it's actually showing up right about here. Oh, it is showing up right here. Okay, you have at the top, you have your search contract. Okay, right here, you have your share contract. This is the start button, okay? And this is your device contract and your setting contract. Those contracts are vital to your system because right now, when you're creating an application that has any settings at all, and every application should have at least one setting, and that should be privacy policy, so that you're indicating whether you have or are giving out any information or collecting any information about the user, whether it's their location, accessing their contacts, accessing any information, you need to actually address that in your privacy policy. That's actually a stipulation of getting your application certified. Right now, I don't know of any Windows Store applications that are certified without a privacy policy. Oh, yeah, sorry, yes. If your application is not connected to the internet in any way, or you have to declare, yeah, you actually have to expressly declare it. Sorry, yeah, that is the way. My apologies. Yeah, I haven't built any applications like that yet. Okay, the other great one to have is the shared contract, okay? That allows you to share information between other applications and allow your application to get other information from other applications. You can actually create private share contracts between different applications of your own. That's one thing that I'm really excited for that I want to see on the phone because I have so many applications that work awesome together. But I don't have the ability to do that right now. On Windows 8, you do, okay? You have the ability to say, you know what? This is my app A, and you know what? I'm going to share that information with my app B, which is fantastic in a business scenario, in a line of business application. It can be vital, okay? So that's definitely one you want to take a look at. Also, the devices. That's the one that gives you the access to things like Play to, Print to, all of the, and access to other things like, for example, I'm writing an application right now that I'm working on access to glucose meters for a diabetics application that I'm writing. So there are, through that, you access that through the devices contracts. And then the last one is search. Okay, so search allows you to make your application either search for information within your application, or also to set up a contract to allow the system or other applications to search for information within your application. And you can prescribe exactly how that information is available and what is available in that application. So if you're collecting, let's say, sales data for your line of business application, you can say, you can search by product and it'll show you all the product's names, but that's it. That's all you can see unless you're actually in my application. Okay? And then in that case, it could actually end up opening up the your application to show more information based on that those search results. So one of the other things I can't stress enough is to make sure that you invest properly in having a great tile. Okay? Your tile is your face to the consumer. Okay? Anybody got an application that they can't remember what the heck that icon does? You look at their icon and like, what the heck was that? What's that? And they click on it and they're like, oh yeah, that's that application. I didn't know that was that. That is an example of someone not making use of that particular UI element. Invest in a great tile. If you can come up with a way that your application can express more information or give information to the user without them actually opening it, it actually sounds counterintuitive. And I know for me it sounded that way for a long time, where I said, well, if I write enough on my tile, then they won't have to open my app. No, actually what it does is it does the opposite. Engages them, gets them looking for more information. You give them a bit of information, you let them see something quickly and easily right from the screen, right from the start screen. What will happen is your application will become one of the ones at the front of their start screen, and then it'll also become one of the ones that they end up looking at and using on a constant basis. It will really help to drive your user interaction and also to drive your downloads, because how many people here have ever installed an application because they saw it on someone else's device and they thought it was cool? Right. That's actually one of my biggest selling points for my applications, is people see the tiles and they go, what's that? And they you know, oh, just look at this. And that ends up being word of mouth is a fantastic marketing tool. And utilize it by creating a great and immersive tile. Now, also, feel free to use the cloud wherever you can. And by the cloud, either creating your own cloud service or using open data initiatives that are available all over the place to create something that gives them that much more information, makes the user feel that much more connected. I think most of my applications that make me the happiest are the ones that make me feel like I've gotten information from different places and combined them in one place so that I can get more information quickly and easily. So creating something that's connected experience can really, really be engaging and vital for the user. And again, embrace the modern UI principles, okay? If you look at the modern UI applications that we bring up, I can't really open most of these because the screen's resolution won't let me open a lot of these. Yeah. Yeah, I won't be able to get them on there, so that's fine. So engage the UI principles, the standard principles of making your UI clean, okay? You do not have to clutter your screen. Anybody got an application they hate because it's just too hard to look at for any period of time? Right? We all do, okay? Mine that comes to mind is Outlook. I tend to close sub-windows on Outlook all the time because I find there's just too much crap there. And then I've got one line of things and then my messages. That's it. I close everything else off. Because it becomes overwhelming. We have so much coming at us all the time. The idea of the clean, immersive, engaging experience that the Metro UI gives us is something that you find That's why. How many people like the UI in Windows 8? How many people are still getting used to it? How many people hate it? Okay, but the thing is, if you see less people hate it, and honestly, in this room, we're the people that would hate it the most if anybody was really going to hate it, because we're the ones that have been using computers heavily, day in, day out, all the time, for the last X years, 10, 15, 20, 30, in my case, it seems like hundreds. But we're the ones that are more likely to go, I hate that, it's so different, I hate it. What's happening is you'll find that a lot of people that are newer to computers or are not as immersed as we are tend to really like it, because you know what? It's simple, okay? It's clean. They're looking at one thing, they're not confused. People don't like to be confused, okay? Some people do, okay? And some people are a little crazy. But most people don't like to be confused. They like to be left in looking at one thing and knowing that they can focus on that and get it done. And the modern UI really gives you that ability. Creating a UI that, oh, my battery's running low. I might want to plug in my PC. Actually, no, I don't want to because I'm really mad at that one. I'm going to let it die a painful death. one of the things that people really like is the ability, one of the things that really engages the users in the modern UI is utilizing font sizing, font colors, and scaling of elements to properly denote what is important and what's not, what's less important, or what is title and what is content. It really helps create a really easy to consume interface, and it creates a really engaging experience for the users. And I don't know. Hello? I can't go to the Windows Store because it won't open. my apologies. So the Windows Store itself is designed for discovery, okay? You have the ability to reach a much larger audience on the Windows platform than you have in any other platform. Over 400 million Windows 7 users last year, right? $677 million? Okay. I was going to say, I thought it was a much bigger number than that. nice. And I think the numbers I'd heard is the first week or something, it was 4 million Windows 8. I don't remember, I can't say 100%, but I'm pretty sure that was the number I'd heard. It was something like 4 million in a week or something, which is fantastic numbers. I mean, if you're looking at numbers to develop for a large audience, how many people here think that they missed the iPhone market by just that much, right? Exactly. And that's how I felt too. It's one of the reasons why I was really happy about Windows Phone when it came out, and that's why I'm even happier about Windows 8 when it comes out, because it's a monster market, okay? You have the chance now to get into what is quite conceivably the largest market by multitudes, okay? By more than double all of the other markets combined. It is a massive market, massive scale, and Microsoft is basically taking care of the distribution for you, which, like I said, from an independent developer's perspective, that's a fantastic thing. You also have the ability to create a flexible business model. So you have, what that means is you have the ability to create different monetization models that suit how your application will both work and how you best perceive your application to be monetized. So you can do things like in-app purchases, you can do ads, you can have a free with trial, or you can just go, hey, just pay me. I'm not letting you see anything, just pay me. Good luck with that. That doesn't tend to really fly as well. But I know I've tried it. But usually what I find is the best model tends to be free with trial, okay? And from what I've seen from the phone market, I haven't really seen as much. I haven't really delved. I've got a whole bunch of applications made for Windows 8. They're not released yet. So I'm in the process of releasing that. So check back with me, check on my blog. And oh, my battery's very low. Good, suffer. one of the things I'll definitely be blogging and tweeting about, you know, what I find when I release my applications and how they're coming out. And the best economics, when you look at the ad revenue and the payout for the ads, Microsoft's ads tend to pay out the best out of all the other platforms that I've examined so far. So it's an excellent model. It follows at least as good as any of the other models, and in a lot of respects better. So it's definitely something that you should be taking a look at. Okay, so basically what we have here is we have a model that shows you a little bit of the layout of the Windows Store, okay? So you have from the Windows Store, you install it. The package comes in from the Windows Store backend. You have a package manager in your operating system that basically sets the execution and sets the install of the application. Now, what happens when applications are installed? They are available to the person that installed them. Okay, so if more than one person are using that computer, only the person that installed the application will see the application on the start screen. Okay? If another user wants to use that application, and that's different than the traditional model, because the traditional model was you install it and that application's there for everybody. How many people share a computer at home with more than one person? Right? How many people have looked at the desktop and gone, why'd you install all this crap on the machine? Right? Okay, well, that gets away from that scenario. So basically what happens now is the person that installs it is the one that sees it on their start menu. If someone else wants it, if somebody else wants Angry Birds or Cut the Rope or one of those other applications, they can go to the store and choose it for themselves. It does not install the files all over again on the machine. Okay, what it does is the store goes in, checks the checks to see that it's already installed on the device, and then creates the instance folders for that particular user, so the new user can now see the application. Now, if that person uninstalls it, it uninstalls their instance folders, but still leaves the application there because it knows someone else is also still wants this application. So if you want to install your application, you have to install it for each of the people that have installed it. And okay, we're back. Anyway, so basically, the building blocks of your application and your deployment system, the first thing is the app manifest. Okay, which basically contains all the information needed to deploy the application. It extends to both to the store and to the computer accepting your application from the store. It extends the information that tells it what devices, what sensors, what services, what components it needs to have access to in order to function properly. Okay, so it's basically your roadmap for how your application works and how things are supposed to run within your application. Now, the block map, okay, basically contains a list of the files and the resources contained in your application so that it knows exactly whether the application has come through properly or not. It contains all the hashes. And then the signature basically validates the integrity of your application package. Okay, so the app manifest capabilities basically explicitly declares what the application needs. Like I said before, actually, I've already talked this slide through too, actually. Basically, what happens is your application starts off when the user launches the app, okay? When you, how many people here are familiar with Windows Phone, this tombstoning suspension, that thing? Okay, so not a lot. Okay, so what happens is your user starts your application's running. When a person swipes in another application or goes back and starts up another application, your application goes into a suspended state, okay? It is a light suspension, okay, which basically means your information and state of your application is held for as long as your application is kept in the memory stack and also as long as the machine is still running. If someone's machine, the battery dies like mine did, it doesn't remember what slide I was on, it doesn't remember where I was or what I was doing. It's at that state. That's why you would need to basically... you come to a low resources point when there's too many apps running or when the power has died on your machine and you go into a terminated app state. At that point, what you want to do is you want to make sure that you have made basically any allowances or any basic functionality has been enabled for tombstoning that information, okay? Now, tombstoning is a new concept and a new term for a lot of developers, but for people that have been in the mobile space for a while, it's a very common term. It's basically saying, let's hold the state right here and bring you right back to where you were when you come back. Okay? So that's something that you're going to want to make sure that you're aware of and that your application takes advantage of, especially if it ends up being necessary. Let's say that they're putting in a certain amount of information. You want to make sure that they don't have to come back and redo all of that. So one of the... So next screen, sorry. I've talked past certain ports.
No, you just tell me when to go.
Okay, so you have a couple of different states of data for your application. Your application has access to the app's data itself, and that would be in a local storage situation that is specifically held private for that application. That can be application that is specific to that application, data that is specific to that application, and you do not want to have access by other applications or by the user in other general component sense. So let's say, for example, your settings for your application, or maybe it's banking information. You don't want the banking information kept in the user data portion of the system because you don't want it to be possibly accessible by other applications or by the user in general to cause problems if more than one person is using the device. You also have access to the user data store, which gives you access to the My Documents folder, the photo library. So they're basically the libraries. The documents library, the photo library, the music library, and the video library. Okay, now this is actually a fantastic feature. How many people here have got Windows 8 running in more than one place? Yeah? How many people here absolutely love the fact that when you logged in on the second place, it knew what your desktop looked like, it knew where your things were supposed to be, your files were there? That is awesome. I love that. I usually have at any given time, I'm actually constantly having to turn devices off because I hit the maximum all the time, but I have about 10 to 15 devices at any given time running. So on and off. I'm not always using them all at the same time. I'm not that schizophrenic. But one of the nice things is that I loaded this device up, and it automatically picked up my desktop wallpaper. It picked up my settings. I went into email. It had all my email accounts already set and ready to go. I just had to put in the passwords to verify that, yes, I'm really the person I say I am, and yes, I really do want to see my email. But other than that, I didn't have to go in and set up all the settings. I didn't have to... remember how many email addresses I wanted in my device. It just remembered it. That's a fantastic feature, and that's a feature that you as a developer have access to. You have the ability to access local and roaming storage. The roaming storage means that you can actually save information in your application so that someone could finish something in one place, close that computer down, go home, or go out to a coffee shop, or go wherever they're going, open up their laptop or their tablet, whatever else, open up your app, and it's right there, and it's available. That is a fantastic feature. And for me, I've already got several applications that use it. It's something that if you explore it, the amount of ideas you'll come up with will be completely endless. So as a recap, basically, when we're looking at the app execution, you have the ability to isolate information, okay? You have the ability to share information or isolate it as much as you want. You have the ability to remain connected to both cloud services and to other devices running your application. And you have the ability to be incredibly performant because your code is running closer to the layer of the OS than it's ever run before, and it's running cleaner and quicker. The UI elements are tighter. Tighter woven, I don't know how to really say it. I've tested applications for concept from a Windows 7 application to a Windows 8 application, and I've never found it to not be a lot faster in the UI. The UI is fantastic. I really like it. I find it really exciting, but then again, like I said, I'm a little crazy. My orange juice. Okay, so you also have the ability to institute push notification through the Windows mobile or the Azure mobile services. And that's actually something I'll be doing a talk on.
There is a talk later
That would be me. Yeah, I'll be talking about that. I promise I'll be using a different machine. So if you come in, it will not be on this machine. I am not. That machine's going in my car. I'm not going to tell you where my car is. Yes. So anybody here heard of developer movement? Anybody like free stuff? Anybody want an Xbox? Really? Anybody want a laptop? I think it's a touch laptop too, isn't it? Do you know? I'm going to have to look that up. Okay, so basically, developermovement.ca, okay? It's a fantastic site. Microsoft did this last year. I had a blast last year. I won an Xbox and a set of Dr. Dre headphones and 1,400 Microsoft points. And my Xbox wasn't the like 4-gig Xbox. It was the 250 Xbox with Kinect. It was fantastic, a really good one. And now I actually play video games, which really, really, really makes my brother happy, really, really disappoints my girlfriend. but that being said, developer movement is a fantastic promotion Microsoft's putting on. So you go out, you develop your applications and make sure that you register them and log them in with developer movement after you've released them to the marketplace, and you'll get points. And you can use those points to buy tons of different things. I think there's like 50 different things on the site. There's a huge list of different things. So everything from Xbox, the Kinect if you've already got the Xbox, headphones, points. Yeah, and there's a laptop. There's a really, really nice laptop on there. I can't remember whether it's touch-enabled or not. But basically, you can go in and you can either mass up your points to get something really cool, like bigger, or you can buy several different things with the points. And you also get points for just signing in. So go in and sign in, and you get enough points, I think, to get like T-shirts and stuff like that right away. Awesome, cool. So definitely check out developermovement.ca. Okay, it's definitely something that you should take a look at. How many people here are currently developing a Windows 8 app? Cool. Anybody here developing a phone app? Anybody here writing something that's connected with Azure? Awesome, cool, cool. Okay, so all of those things will get you points on developer movement. So the ones you've already started and that you're doing will get you points on developer movement. So it's worth it for all of you people to put up your hands, go to developermovement.ca, check in, see what it is, register. You register with your Windows ID just like you do with the marketplace. And when you release your application, you go back and say, submit my app, and you tell it what your app is, your publisher name, and your app ID, and you'll get points for those applications that you're already building. For any of you that aren't building apps, start building apps. Win some stuff, okay? I'm actually right now, can I talk about that? The phone? Okay. So right now, I'm also a Nokia developer ambassador, as well as being a Microsoft phone MVP. So right now, I'm doing a contest for any developer that builds 5 apps. The first 5 people that have built 5 apps each get a phone. I'm giving away 2 phones here this weekend from people that have already started it. And the contest just started on the 7th of November. So it's not hard. Also, one of the other things I want to say is when it comes to your applications, you do not have to build monolithic applications. I found that all of the applications that I have applications that get downloaded more than 1,000 times a day, and between all of those applications, there's less than 30 lines of code. Okay? I've got 5 applications that get downloaded more than 1,000 times a day, and between those 5 applications, there's less than 30 lines of code. Okay? Let that sink in. You do not have to create the next Facebook to make money. You can create the next Facebook if you think that you've got the perfect idea. I'm not saying don't go for it. I'm saying if you've got an idea that's simple, does something, and gets something done that you want to get done, or you think needs to get done, or you think other people would like to get done, do it. Okay? People want those things. Simple apps that I've made, turn things on, turn things off, give people a quick little piece of information, and you have no idea. I'm astounded by how many people download it. Okay, I released an app this week that is a simple game that I took all of the code for it, including all the controls, from another application that didn't play a game and made a game out of it, and it's already made me a couple of hundred bucks in ads. Okay? You can take a very simple, very easy idea. How many people here have applications that do one thing and do it really well and they love it? Anybody? On your phone, on your device, on your tablet, anywhere, right? How many people open calculator all the time? Right. Simple application does one thing, does it really well. That actually can tend to be a really big win for you, okay? And you can put out an application like that, get some really cool points for it, get some cool stuff, but also you can go out and you can make some money from it. Okay, well, I'd like to thank you all for spending some of your time with me this morning, and hopefully I will see you again.